Aussies love the bush, but sometimes the bloody bush doesn't love us back. I'm John Harper, just a simple joker talking about why mental health is everybody's business and what to do if you think a mate is struggling.
This podcast is a Room 3 production and brought to you by our mates at the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries and their Farm Business Resilience Program team. You'll be hearing the lived experiences of everyday folk in rural and remote Australia. The language can be strong at times and references of suicide may upset some people. So consider who's within earshot when listening. Any advice in this podcast is of a general nature and we recommend seeking professional health advice from your GP or medical professional. If you're struggling with your mental health, please visit the show notes or matehelpingmate.org.au for links to trusted service providers across the country.
You know, we had 1,400 acres burnt out and, you know, my husband was born on that farm and he's never lived anywhere else. And we sort of got up and we looked around and we thought, what do we do now? Where do we start?
And I said, I still have issues. I had to shoot. Well, I didn't. I got a marksman, put a lot of my cattle down. We put them in a dam, filled them in. I got to force myself to walk past there, but I wasn't motivated. I couldn't get going. I was just, lights was on, but no one home.
Even though your world's just been blown to bits, in our minds, we were still okay. We were alive. We were okay. We didn't need charity, you know, because you feel so embarrassed. You are so embarrassed that you need help. We'd just say, well, no, we're okay, we don't need help. One night we just looked at each other in tears and said, we need help.
I was told to go back out to the bush and deal with the native animals that were burnt. I had a firearm with me all the time. A couple of times it crossed my mind, should it be me? But then you'd see a heap of roos or a deer or a brumby and you'd walk up and you'd put it down. And it seems strange to say this, but it gave me a bit of relief knowing that I put that poor bloody thing out of its misery.
G'day, mates. Welcome to the second episode of a Mate Helping Mate live podcast recording. If you haven't heard, we've got out of the studio and we're on the road, getting communities together to share and connect with one another. And as we know, with mental health, a problem shared is a problem halved. Our main intention behind this has been to provide a space for open and community-driven conversations around mental health and well-being. And the main focus, I suppose, of all of that is to highlight the wisdom that you people have and the strategies that we can share amongst our mates to get everybody to a better place. This second episode was recorded in Tooma. Tooma is a bloody small place halfway between Tumbarumba and Cancoban, the middle of nowhere. There's around 40 families live there and basically based on grazing industries at this stage. But through history, it's had gold rushes, it's had dairying, it's had tobacco growing. And as I said, the main industry there at the moment seems to be grazing, cattle and sheep and timber workers. And recently, that is within the last couple of years, the Tooma people were bitten bloody hard by the fires. So it's very interesting to see how Tooma is coping 2 years on after that trauma because we're in a recovery mode. In this podcast, I'm joined by Ian Bell, Sharon Goldspink and Macca McPherson. Pretty obvious Macca's got to be a Mac something. They're up the front, and we have also a room of local people, roughly about 15. Okay, sit back. I hope you're comfortable. I'm going to waffle on for a little bit at the moment and hit you with some homegrown Harper analogies, the classic being me old beauty, Humpty Dumpty. And our first speaker after that will be Sharon Goldspink, who's been off that bloody wall quite a few times, but she's been resilient enough to get back up there so she can see the future. What I would like people really to understand is that your physical life and your mental life are intertwined. You can't pull them a site. People, and men in particular, often get focused on just the physical stuff. Money, actually doing the physical work, whatever. And what a lot of us don't understand is that we don't get out of bed in the morning unless we want to. And want to is mental. That if you don't want to get out of bed, that's where you'll bloody well stay. And your brain gets you to do things all the time. You don't understand. It's like a computer on auto. Okay, you're blinking, your eyes are moist. You're not thinking about, you're not telling yourself to breathe in, breathe out, moisten your lips, whatever else. Your brain's doing all that. And your brain can have you do negative sort of stuff if you're not aware. Okay? So it comes back to Henry Ford said, if you think you can't, you're right. You know, if you think you can, you probably will. It's that kind of thing. So what we find with people when they get kicked in the guts, whatever else, their brain is, if it starts being negative, is saying, you can't do this, then that's what ends up happening. You don't get out of bed and it pees you off and you just go down. So your brain's telling you that, then little problems become big problems. And, you know, at one stage, when I was really flat, I was going to chuck it all in and move to the Northern Territory where men are men, you know. And I was flat as a tack. And it all came back to a little thing that my brain built into a massive thing. So I got really peed off because my missus used to squeeze the toothpaste in the middle of the tube. Pissed me off. I nearly left everything, family, farm, everything, and go to the Northern Territory because she used to squeeze the toothpaste in the middle of the tube. I bought those things that you put on and wind the tube up and do all that kind of shit, you know, but nah, she squeezed in the middle. And as I was getting flatter, okay, I was going into depression, I'd get up in the morning, I'd have my breakfast, I'd go outside, get in the tractor, and before I did that, I would have cleaned my teeth, and there's the freaking toothpaste. And my brain's saying, why does she do that? And my brain's saying, because she doesn't love you. And that's what your perception is. So when your brain starts going flat, little things like the toothpaste become big things. It's all perception, you know. What's the advantage of you people being involved in a podcast, of coming together, going to the fire sheds, having a few beers, not getting drunk on it, is that by coming together, you see reality. The problem. There's a problem here with fires, whatever. But deal with the real problem, not what your brain is telling you. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about preparedness, understanding how everything's intertwined, mentally, whatever. And then I suppose in the end of it all comes back to, as I said, it's little things that kids and stuff say. Is that my wife has been a kindergarten teacher for a long, long time. And she does Humpty Dumpty all the time. And I see Humpty Dumpty mental health like Humpty Dumpty. Okay? We're all up there when things are good. We're all sitting up on the wall. We're happy as Larry. Hey, we ain't prepared for anything. But what happens to Humpty Dumpty? He falls off the wall. Okay? He's shattered. And a little kid, 5-year-old kid, puts a hand up and goes, Mrs. Harper, Mrs. Harper, why didn't Humpty's friends stop him falling off the wall? Why didn't they catch him? That's what this podcast is about, okay, is understanding, okay, we might have a bloody great property, we might have everything in order, whatever else, but we have to be aware that there is a possibility of falling off the wall. Let's put in place strategies, and in doing that, we in Tuma are prepared as a community to talk a little bit about some of the strategies that have helped us stay on the wall, okay? It's all very good to talk about the shit when we've hit the floor and we're shattered. Very hard to put us back together again. Let's open up and talk a little bit about some of these strategies. Would you say you're in a state of recovery, Sharon? What, you lost your house, everything basically?
Yes. Yes. And I am so lucky that we live in a little community of Coorabarra, and the support and the love that's in that little community is unbelievable. To the point where there's one lady and she's sitting in the room here right now, and sorry, without her saying, come on, come here, come here, come here. And I made up every excuse, no, 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 no. And then just one day I thought, you know what? If I don't say yes, she's going to stop asking. And to this day, there's a friendship that will not be broken, consistently checking in and making me have a conversation.
So one of those things in, if you've got a feeling that you've got a neighbour or a friend struggling, is never give up, basically.
Don't give up. Don't give up. And look, I'm not saying that it's been the golden fix by any means. There's still days. But what I have learnt, and now I'm confident enough and, well, not confident enough, but comfortable enough within that relationship. And I've only just done it just a fortnight ago, where I was to go somewhere with them and I just messaged them and said, today I'm having a bad day. Now I know it's okay to say, actually, I really don't want to face that today. I'd rather just be by myself. They know it's okay, but still, they still check in. How are you going? And vice versa.
And you're in, what, a phase of recovery? You lost your home, your family home, and a lot of the things that you hold there.
I lost a lot of that, John. And it's not the be all and the end all. I've had awful traumas and tragedies through loss of my sister and her little baby in a car accident, and different illnesses in myself where I was told, well, you know, probably won't pull through this, open heart surgery, all of that sort of stuff. And I would say the fire was actually the icing on the cake for me, because after the fire, I actually acknowledged that to the extent of the open heart surgery. And that really hit me like a ton of bricks then. But what I will say, with the open heart surgery, I was in the most horrid, bottomless pit. And I keep saying to myself, I don't ever want to be that low ever, ever again.
So a couple of points come out of that, and I know from my own story is probably the same, is that I don't want to go through most of the shit I went through, just as you didn't. But by doing so and coming out the other side, I'm actually a stronger, in italics, and better person than I was. And that doesn't mean I want to go through trauma like that again. And then the other thing that gets me is the appreciation of positive things in life. As we drove down here today, and you people live here, so sometimes when you live in a place you become too familiar, you forget about the good points. But we saw some bloody magnificent trees and views in the sunlight, and even with the fog, you know, it's just amazing at times. And I know that when I was younger, that I wouldn't have saw that stuff, and I can't get over that sort of appreciation. In your community, Maragal, around here in Tuma, is in a recovery phase. What kind of things seem to be working and pulling us through? Are there positives there, or are people still struggling with dealing with the negatives?
Yeah, look, I think most people have, they did struggle for a while, but most people are sort of getting on top of it now. I personally, as a fire captain, had a pretty good handle on who was struggling a bit, and you know, you just drop by and have a cup of tea and a bit of a chin wag and that, and I found it very good personally too. We went through a fair bit of trauma at the time. It helped me as well, but so it made you feel good helping other people.
Yeah. And even when you came across something that's a bit heavier or something that you weren't possibly comfortable in dealing with, did you have people you could turn to that was, in italics, smarter or
not initially, because we were pretty well isolated. Roads were cut and so forth. But when shit really hit the fan, when we were told to evacuate the area, we had to stand our ground and say, well, you know, we've prepared our properties fairly well. But we had detectives knocking on our doors saying, get out. It's not survivable. But where that became very stressful, because I had family who had left. We had them on the phone because they'd seen it on television that the place has got to be evacuated. People were ordered to get out. I found that was the hardest, because having family and friends on the phone saying, you know, what are you doing, Belly, you know?
So you had confidence in your preparation, okay, because you'd done a fair bit of diligent work and you were prepared to work with that and your family were supporting you?
Yeah,
exactly. And the wider community as well?
Yeah, exactly. And neighbours were helping neighbours. We had a few days just to prepare. We feared the worst and ploughed around people's houses and helped them prepare. But it was probably a lot worse than what we first feared. And we had, unfortunately, next door neighbour's son got badly burnt. And that was pretty distressing at the time. Had a tanker burn over and a council grader. That all happened within about 5 minutes, actually.
So, Magga, at the height of the trauma, was it the strength of what confidence in your community aided you in dealing with, in this instance, the fire?
Well, was it? Yeah. Well, it all started off, you know, with a sharing of trauma. I was in a serious accident. Car hit us head on, pushed us down over a bank. We landed in a lagoon about 80 metres down. I was trapped in dirty water. I wasn't supposed to be in the vehicle because I'd come in and the fella went home sick. And I give up. My head was underwater. I was drowning. I seen my life in front of me. And I can't never remember my mother, but I could see her face there. And the best thing of it, I get a bit emotional. My wife, Pam, we're probably better mates than we are, husband and wife. And I couldn't get out. I took my last breath of air and I was prepared to die. I was gone. And she said, come on, you old bastard, you can do it. With that, I spat some water out. And I reckon I could hear somebody coming through the water. And a hand went through, pushed my hair back. And they said, that's you, Dad, don't die. And no one knew that I was in that vehicle. My son was in the SES chase. And as soon as he touched me, he knew it was me. And that's where father and son, mates, yeah, we're better mates than we are father and son. As soon as he touched me, he said he knew it was you. And he started yelling, don't die, Dad, don't die. I'll get you out. And with that, you just get strength from bloody nowhere. And I heaved and grunted and gasped and undone the seatbelt and I fell back. And then the Georgia Death come and cut me out. That's what got us through the fires. I had sons up there who was trapped in. And I said, I still have issues. I had to shoot. Well, I didn't. I got a marksman, put a lot of my cattle down. We put them in a dam, filled them in. And from this day, even today, a lot of them cattle I'd led in chairs. I got to force myself to walk past there. So I got to bloody draw myself up above that. Come above it, but I wasn't motivated. I couldn't get going. I just, lights is on, but no one home. But I would have never self-harmed myself because I think that's a wrong way out. And then the sheiks come along. Well, I reckon they was better than God, if there's a God. I learned so much off them. I was never raceless much. There's always a bit in us. But with them, look, they turned a whole new corner.
The Sikhs were what, a group from Canberra or somewhere?
They bought from Melbourne, Sikhs.
Yep.
They turned the corner really for me. I could see that, yeah, we can rebuild because there's people out there, well-educated people that just give up their time and wouldn't let me do a thing. They said, you show us what you wanted to get done. Finished getting all the cattle that had to be destroyed. Got some fences bit repaired. They got hay. I had solicitors, medicos, doctors, jumping on half-burnt tractors, feeding stock.
Now, you had all different sorts of helping you out. Did you find that or have you found that in your journey?
Yeah, Blaze Aid were an enormous help for me anyway. Yeah, we lost all the property, all the fences. And, they were enormous help, just to somebody to talk, just different to talk to and for the amount of work that they'd actually done.
So they're important on two fields. So yeah. Life is not just physical. Even us as farmers realise, okay, fences are important, but there's more to that when we want help and struggle.
Oh, they were
yeah, that was a hell of a bunch of people. Like, you know, you laughing and joking, and they done a bloody power of work too. Don't worry about that. But they also, like, probably mentally, I suppose, like sort of somebody different to talk to and laugh and joke and see the funny side of things. And I don't really know how to say it. It's sort of a good point of a really shit show.
Often when I was younger, if I got a kick in the guts, I'd be waiting for another one because bad things come in threes.
Yeah.
And it's interesting is that sometimes when you're down, that's what happens. You're just waiting to go down further. And it's important sometimes that other people put in.
Well, for me anyway, it was like Belly and Triggsy and that sort of stuff because I put all my cattle on the road after the fires. And, well, there was very little water, but they sort of helped me out with a bit of water. And
so you're all in the shed, but you're all prepared to put yourselves out a bit. Yeah,
all sort of still helping each other out and sort of doing stuff for each other, yeah, yeah. Just what you do for each other in a little community, like you just help each other out.
And, Sharon, when we're talking about recovery and stuff, you talked about your girlfriends or neighbours that stepped in. Were there other levels of support that helped you through your struggles?
Absolutely. Just with the fire, Mark and I just went, you know, people, we'd just say, well, no, we're okay. We don't need help. And then there was just this one night we just looked at each other in tears and said, we need help. A group of people started a donation shed in town. And we said, and they contacted us and they said, come and have a look, get what you want, right? And we both went, no, we're right.
You weren't going to accept help.
Well, that was the hardest part because it's, even though your world's just been blown to bits, you're still in our minds, we were still okay. We were alive. We were okay. We didn't need what we thought, well, we don't bloody need charity. Like we'd, you know, because you feel so embarrassed. You are so embarrassed that you need help.
When we do struggle in times, that's when we start realising our community may be bigger than what we thought. So, Ian, through the fire sheds, did you get involved with the Fire Shed Friday stuff?
Yes, we did. We had an evening at Tuma here and we gave the caterers some numbers that we thought probably turn up and, cut a long story short, we ran out of food.
So they came for the tucker or what did they come for, do you think?
Oh, look, company and have a yarn, mates helping mates, I guess.
We're lucky we got Louise Horsley, whoever she was part of the Fire Shed Friday crew, and she comes from the other side of Tuma. Why the hell would you come this far to Tuma? Why did you get involved in that sort of stuff, Louise?
You've heard already what a fabulous community this is. I guess I say this quietly, but clearly you're going to hear me. The fires have been bloody good for me because it's taken me out of Go Cup. And you're talking about people helping. It can never be underestimated what people get out of helping.
But to a certain extent, was the Fire Shed Friday stuff gave impetus to the community helping themselves. They came together and talked, but through you people, the crew of the Fire Shed Fridays, they had access to pathways to other avenues of help.
It brought communities together who, there were people, particularly one which was quite a difficult shed. The community there was really fractured and it brought people together that hadn't even seen each other since the fires and probably not spoken to each other before the fires. You know, and it, Sharon, you spoke about you knowing your neighbours. There are places within this area where you don't know your neighbour. But since the fires, that has brought people out and they've met each other.
So Andrew Ray is here as well, and Andrew is considered a local. He's also part of formal type government arrangement. Would that be right in helping communities and people?
Yeah, so I've worked with local, federal and state government now. I'm with the state government and my role is in disaster recovery. So a couple of things that really hit home for me here today and in my work over the last 3 years is the need for connections through communities. I have watched people like Sharon and Mark go through their recovery, and whilst it's been bloody tough, the connection to community, the family support that they had probably made their recovery a lot easier than some of the other people that I've had to deal with one-on-one. We had a lot of impact here, as we all know, 405,000 hectares, 194 houses lost. Some of those houses that people lost were people new to our communities in some more remote places within our communities that didn't have those connections or ties to our area that people like Sharon, Mark and Macca and Ian had. So their journey through recovery has looked a lot different. It's been hard on them. It's been very tough. So the work that Louise and the foundation did along with Jen Wines in the Fireshed Friday, something so simple, was really important to bring communities back together. The other thing that we forgot was straight after the fires, when it's proven that bringing communities back together after disasters is probably the most important thing you can do. And we had COVID. So for 2 years, we couldn't actually bring our communities and connect again and help heal after the disaster. So, yeah, we struggle with that. So that actually isolated everyone again. So, yeah.
So, Richard, what do you think are the strengths of the Tuma community?
It's a bit hard to say, but I think, you know, most families in Tuma are very resilient. They have, well, that's just the nature of farming or whatever.
Well, that's why you're still here.
Yes.
This joker over here, I'm going to throw it in because he was going to sleep. This fella comes from the next valley over east of us. What's good about your valley or community of that valley?
We don't have fires.
It doesn't burn.
No, that's right. We've had pretty bad fires here, like last one and then 10 years before that. And even before that, we've had fires around us. But where we actually live, we haven't experienced fires.
You prepare?
Yes. Yes.
So, and that's one of the points we need to take away as we go to this break, is that in regards to mental health or mental well-being, most people don't want to even talk about it because they don't think it's going to happen to them. But just like Barry, preparation comes into it.
Well, it's preparation in a sense that we expect there's going to be a fire every summer, and we're always waiting for the lightning strikes or something like that. So there's a sense that we are prepared in that way. We are expecting something every year. So we have that built-in awareness or resilience there, yeah.
Well, folks, there's some wisdom from the Tumarites. Not just Ian, Sharon and Macca, but a few of the other locals. So keep listening after these couple of words from our sponsors, because as you see, I'm on a roll. I've got bloody stupid and I'm prepared to hand the mic around to any other locals so they can add their lived experience and the wisdom they gained from those experiences. I'd like to reiterate how grateful we are, the Mate Helping Mate team, for the support we have been shown in launching these bush-baked conversations.
This podcast is a Room 3 production and is brought to you by our mates at the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries and their Farm Business Resilience Program team. The Farm Business Resilience Program supports farmers to improve their business acumen and achieve their business goals. The Farm Business Resilience team offers business coaching, farm tours, networking events, and the creation of resources for farmers across New South Wales. We'd also like to thank and acknowledge those of you who have donated to Mate Helping Mate's GoFundMe campaign. Your commitment has been integral to our work.
All right, I want this to be, as I said all along, a community recording. I'm going to pass the mic, and if you can't, don't worry, but just try and think of things that you think are important or that you may have got out of this, or you've learnt something along that line, please put it out there.
One thing, John, what's opened my eyes up is doesn't matter whether it's a death in your family or anything, a fire, whatever it is grief. This is my coping strategy. Allow yourself to accept this is grief. Ride through those waves. I'm not here to say, hey, that's the perfect answer. There is still, and I am still going through crap days. There is the sunshine, but there is still those dark days. allow yourself those dark days. Don't fight it. You can never fight it. But do not allow yourself to stay there.
And sometimes, Sharon, it's not, words aren't necessary. So one of the things that Ian brought up that I'm not sure whether this is an angle he sort of, but he does aerobatics and all that kind of stupid stuff. But it's interesting, perhaps doing those sort of challenges is what is building his ability to deal with stress and anxiety. I take it that most of you've seen these idiots that do the cold showers and jump in the ice baths and all this kind of stuff. Well, behind that apparently is this strategy that mentally it strengthens you, because who the hell wants to have a cold shower? So your brain doesn't want you to, but you do it. So it's a challenge. You hop in, and when you get out, you're invigorated. Physically, it invigorates you, but mentally it does, because you say, shit, I've done something that I didn't think I could do, and here I am. It's like giving yourself a little setback, a little challenge. You conquer it, and that makes you stronger, more resilient, and away you go. But in saying that, there's no way I'm going to have a cold shower. Now, Robbie is a man who goes about, and he would like his kids, I'm presuming, to be better people or better persons than you. How do you go about it? What do you get them involved in, mate? Are you grandpoppy that goes through all their whims and stuff? How are you bringing up your grandkids?
Well, my grandchildren, I certainly give as much encouragement and positivity to as I possibly can without being ridiculous.
So you're trying to get them in a position where their brain is telling them, I think I can, so they probably will, rather than having them just go through life thinking they can't do it. So
absolutely.
You have them doing odd jobs like fencing, what?
Yeah, all that, everything. What I found interesting here is I've got a cousin who's a neuropsychologist, and she said basically love and purpose and love, to be loved and to give love and to have some purpose in your life. And just about everything here today has been centered around that aspect.
I come from up near Kurrabarra and live not far from Sharon and that. And, you know, we had 1,400 acres burnt out, and, you know, my husband was born on that farm and he's never lived anywhere else. And we sort of got up and we looked around and we thought, what do we do now? Where do we start? You know, and we'd just end up in tears. But Blaze Aid came along, and honestly, I could not espouse the virtues of that crowd enough. It wasn't what they did physically. You know, we did a little bit each day, and some days we'd have 3 people there and some days we'd have 9 people there. But they gave us a reason to get out of bed every day to do something, because we knew they were going to be there at 7:30 in the morning. And it was just about putting one foot in front of the other, and, you know, it got us through a really rough patch. And there were people, I could not believe the amount of people that came and helped out with that crowd. You know, they had weekends off. They came from Sydney. One bloke, he was just a young bloke. He worked at Sydney Airport, and he drove down on the Friday night and he went back on the Sunday night. And there were people who worked in a supermarket in Melbourne, did exactly the same. And it was just that gentle hand on your shoulder giving us a reason to get out of bed that made a huge difference to our lives. And I'm sure they made a huge difference to everyone's lives too.
And Mark, I'm going to put the hard word on you. The timber workers copped hell with the aftermath of the fires. Most of us realise that there's no work, basically, and it doesn't take a year for a tree to grow. It's long-term stuff. Yet, while people had gone through the low lows, there is a bit of optimism about. How did that come about? How did you turn about? I suppose you're still working in the timber industry?
Yeah, I am. I work in the hardwood section, which is native forest, and it got smashed. And we'll never see, well, in my lifetime, I'll never see the bush what it was prior to the fires again. Not around here anyway. But as far as the softwoods, which is a plantable forest, they reckon it'll take them 10 years to plant what was burned out in the 2 weeks. But they're well on the way to recovery. There's still a lot to be done. As far as what I do, I'm into the pest control. What got me through my darkest days to start with, I couldn't dwell on what we lost, Sharon and myself, because we were on protective mode for our two daughters who had property south of Tumba. So we were there to make sure that they didn't lose. But then after the fires, like the, like Mac was saying, he had cattle put down, like there'd be a lot of other pastoralists here that had stock put down because they were burnt. I had my own put down. But then I was told to go back out to the bush and deal with the native animals that were burnt. That was hard because at times I had a firearm with me all the time. A couple of times it crossed my mind, should it be me? I'm over this. But then you'd see a heap of roos or a deer or a brumby burnt to, you know, still alive but, you know, struggling. And you'd walk up and you'd put it down. And it seems strange to say this, but it gave me a bit of relief knowing that I put that poor bloody thing out of its misery. And that probably got me through some of my darkest times. But, you know, even today I walk up to the shed. It's a completely new shed, Shane. So I want something put on the wall or something fixed. And I'll walk out of the house, up to the shed, open the door, and I think, you stupid bastard, it ain't the shed and I ain't got that tool no more. And even, you know, this is 3 years on and you just got to take a deep breath and you know, the words come out of your mouth, stuff the fire. But then you look around, you know, we've got one another. We've got our kids, we've got our grandkids, we've got our community. We're all here. We've lost a few mates in the process since the fires. Bloody good mates, and there's a couple that'll be answering to me when I get up there. But at the end of the day, I think out of the fires, if there is a plus, it's made communities like Tooma, Gingellic, Tumbarumba, Coorabira. You know, when we went to Wagga, we had to evacuate to Wagga. We went into a mate's place, an old mate that used to live here. When we went there, he was put into hospital. And these people come there and they seen us walking in. And they said, who are you? They thought we were breaking into the joint. The neighbours, and he said, oh, no, we're coming here, we've been evacuated, we're going to stay here for the next 2 or 3 weeks till we're allowed to go back. And they said, oh, you know, how'd you get on with the fire? I said, oh, you know, told them the story, we lost what this, that and everything else. And you wouldn't believe it, the next day, them people from Wagga didn't know me, from Bar of Soap. There was at least 15 garbage bags full of the clothes for Sharon and myself. And we had to say to them to stop bringing it, not that we were ungrateful, but where the bloody hell do you hang 100 shirts and 100 pair of jeans when you've got nowhere to put it? So we said to them, look, we appreciate everything. We took 3 or 4 pairs to get us through and we said, please take it to St. Vincent's and give it to the people that are homeless on the streets because, you know, it was our hardest thing to accept help, charity, and even today. You know, it's hard, but we're dealing with it.
Good on you, Mark. So I suppose the point being raised through these last couple of comments is about change, is how do you handle change? And all too often people, and men in particular, but country people, think that we survive because we're strong, we're physically strong, or we got bags of money, or we got whatever else. It comes back to the physical. But do you understand what's important in being resilient, in being able to bounce back? Most people think that to survive, you have to be strong, okay? Strong, fast, better than the other. And I mean, it was interesting, Rob took the kids to football, but was it important or paramount that they win or that they just played? And to Rob, kind of just said, look, they played. They did well and they got by. It's not the winning or losing, but we have started to get that way, that to be any good, we've got to be the best. And it's not about being the best or the strongest. Okay, if that was the case, then where are the dinosaurs? Okay, the dinosaurs were the strongest, biggest things around and they ain't here. The crocodile's a dinosaur. He's still here. Why? Because he adapted, okay? He's a quarter of the size of the original one. He lives in water. He's changed his diet, everything else. He's adaptable. Humans are the most successful animal. Why? Are we the strongest animal on the planet? No, we ain't. We're not the fastest. Whatever. We're the most adaptable. We can handle change because of our mental capacity. We can look at a problem in all regards, bar, it seems, mental health. You think about it. If you want to buy a new car, you blokes, what do? You mention it to the missus. You might talk to your mates about it, whatever else, the pros, cons. What are you going to buy? Ford, Holden, whatever. You talk about it. We don't do that in mental health. Our biggest issue is actually acknowledging that we're flat, that there's something that's making us anxious or we're worried or annoyed, and then we're not looking at it. And this is what it's about, adaptability. So what have you done to survive in today's climate, Rob?
That's deep. You have to, don't you? You've got to fill gaps and adjust and find your own strengths and work towards them. And it's not always financial, for sure, but it's achievement and satisfaction. And I think that's how we do it, isn't it?
So ultimately, it's about happiness, how you perceive you're going to be happy with the life you've got?
Yeah, I think we are extremely fortunate. And John, I made the point the other day, why are we here? And we're here because we like this style of life. And otherwise, if it were for money, we wouldn't be here. It's worked out okay over a long time. But if it's only, it's a very up and down industry and we just love doing it. I have two things to add, I think. One is, as we get older, we delete sporting involvement. And I find great refuge in our golf club, for instance. It doesn't have to be golf. It can be anything. But that's great camaraderie. And the other thing that I want for me, it only applies to me probably, is having a project in my life. And it doesn't matter what it is, even if it's just pruning the roses and getting them all done. Personally, I need a project to keep me inspired.
You didn't strike me as a rose man, actually, but anyway. More of a thorn, I thought, but anyway. Okay, Rod, is there anything
that I've got out of today? I think what I've been hearing is that the people who've been through some really tough stuff have got through it and are looking to help others, and that's helped them immensely.
I guess what has come home to me, and particularly if we talk about post-fires, is to try not to be judgmental. I think there are some extraordinary people doing phenomenal things, and I count every one of you in this room in that category, that you just never know what people do and are capable of.
All of us are individuals, but we need a support group around us, and whether that's to help, that can be to help us, and that can be to help the others that we're interacting with.
Good on you, Neil.
I just harp back to the cold shower. My dog has a swim through the creek every day, and he doesn't mind it. But doesn't
oh,
make
your
it,
dog. Does, I thought you were going to tell me you did it.
No, the dog does, but it doesn't make him work any better.
Yeah, but he's happier.
He grins all the time. But just relating back to hearing other people's stories, it just makes you proud to be part of Tuma or be part of a community.
Part of positive people. Lionel.
Yeah, I guess life in general really will make you, well, it all depends what sort of life you got, but life will make you resilient of some description, but it's a real challenges like we've had in the last few years that like really shines it all through.
That comes back to that broad, blunt statement that what doesn't kill you.
Yeah, you've got to make
you stronger.
Makes you better, yeah. And, yeah, as to get through it, we just got to find little things and just keep it simple and sort of start building things up and just sort of challenge yourself every day. It's like just little challenges. And, yeah, you'll eventually get through it.
I keep thinking of your Humpty Dumpty story. And it's about sitting up there on a wall and you've got all your mates around you. And you're hoping if something goes wrong, there's someone there just to prevent you falling. Put your arm around them. Stop them falling. So that's all I've got to say.
Good on you, Triggsy. Top job. Barry.
Yeah, okay. What I was going to say is what you just said. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And adversity makes – getting through adversity and having victory over it makes you stronger. And that's how you build resistance. And the other thing I've heard is hope. People have gained some sort of hope. The people are in this room, the stories I've heard, and they've come out of this situation a lot stronger than what they were before and a lot more community-minded, because that's what these things bring about, brings about community.
Thanks, John. I've probably got three. I think first one for me was accepting that you can be vulnerable and putting yourself out there and saying, hey, yeah, I remember looking at myself in the mirror one day and saying, I'm not the person I was. And then once I actually said those words out loud, I looked around at my group of friends, and then, you know, then you look at your group of mates, and you've always got those two or three mates that are pretty close. And I thought, shit, they're not right. We're not right. So I started to realize that I'd been blocking off social interaction. I'd been putting myself, you know, away from people because I didn't want to talk. But then when I could, I realized that I should. And then it was, you know, it goes back to the Humpty Dumpty thing by doing that. And then just, I remember a good mate of mine, we were up at Tang Tangra fishing, and he made a comment, and I said, I hear you. And he just looked at me and I said, no, I honestly understand what you're saying right now. And we shared some conversations, and I think we missed about four fish during that 30-minute session because we weren't actually paying attention to what the rods were doing. We were just listening to each other. And I reflect back to that, and that mate's gone through some really shit times. And then I got other strategies where I set myself the goal, like, you know, I go to the gym now. I'm not Mr. Olympian. I'm never going to be. But what I do by that is my alarm goes off at 20 past four every morning, and I'm accountable whether I get my ass out of bed or not. And that is the only place in the world that I feel it's me versus me. It's, I've only got yesterday's number to beat, and that's what I do. And I go there and put my headphones on and zone out, and I don't care if there's a guy there that's lifting four times the weight of me. I've only got to beat yesterday's number, and that's all I do. And then each night around the table, you know, the rule at our house is you eat at the table, and I was raised that way, and I feel it's an important part of the family that you share a meal together at least once. There's a lot of time that I've left the house before my daughters wake up, but I'm always there when I can be for the nighttime meal, and we share what was your favourite thing of the day. And my second daughter always says, it's eating dinner. And I said to the wife, you know, it's because we're all together. And she says, yeah, I know that. And then Isla will say, Dad, I know what yours is. And I said, what's that, mate? And she said, it's coming home to see your girls. And for the last 6 months, she said, I'll just answer for Dad. And I'm like, I just want to know, like, if I walk out of here and I don't make it home tonight, that she knows that deep down that they're the reason every morning I go to that gym. And I got through. Because I love him.
Good man, Dallas. Good man. We can skip your mark and go to the next one.
Yeah, I'll take a deep breath after that. But, yeah, I think what I've got out of this and what's come out of since the fires, don't take things for granted. Love the ones closest to you. But above all, learn to love yourself. Because if you don't believe in yourself and you don't love yourself, you can't help anyone else.
Hear, hear. Yeah.
I think I could talk all day on what everyone said because they've all had so much to contribute in such a positive environment. It's been fantastic listening to everyone. But I was thinking about you saying driving in here today and looking around about how beautiful it is. And when you live here, sometimes you just forget that because you do see it every day. And I was thinking about Mark talking about going out into the forestry after the fires and that. And we've got quite a bit of forestry that joined us on the back. And, you know, after the fires, you'd get up and all you could see for miles was just black everywhere. It was just black. And we were up the back right along the edge of the forestry and here, not far from our boundary fence were these two trees. And here was this big spider web with a spider in it. And it had come from nowhere. And it just brought joy to my heart to see that life coming back again to that environment. And I think about what Rob said down the end there about having a project and Ian about his flying and that too. And I thought it's always important to have a project on the go, but it's it's more important to be passionate about something too. If you're passionate about something, you care, you can pass that passion on to whoever wants it too. And I think that brings so much joy to one's life, to be passionate about something. Doesn't matter what it is, anything.
So really, I think it's the little things. And like what Sharon said, the arm around the shoulder, the touch, a hello, how are you? I can certainly say, because I spent 8 months volunteering with Blaze Aid, and I was actually off on stress leave from work at the time and went through a really hard time of 20 years of working. And for me, actually going out and helping someone, I can totally relate to Sharon saying that now she wants to give back. And I found that my biggest joy and the biggest thing to overcome anxiety and depression was actually getting out and helping people. And it wasn't always the big things that you did. I just always think it's the little things. Sometimes it's the little things that are the most important.
All right, Sharon, we're going your way.
I'd just like to thank you, John, because you have actually put me in two very uncomfortable positions. But by being uncomfortable, you've also given me strength, hope, and I just want to say thank you to everyone. I've looked out here today and all I can see is friendship, love coming back at me.
Yeah, I'd also like to thank you, John. I think you're doing an amazing job. I'd like to echo Triggs's statement that, you know, we'll keep an eye out for people that are struggling and always be a shoulder for them to come to me as well.
I think you should be proud, because I think you've done that and been doing that for a number of years in your role and other things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I think it does make you feel uncomfortable, but I think you've done a bloody mighty job, and I think most here would say the same. So good on you,
Ben. Yeah. Thanks, John. Yeah. So, basically continue on what I've been doing. Thank you.
Just a couple of small things. I'd just like to thank you, John. It comes up the farm a few times. It's just great to see a good smiling face, somebody different out of the community. As John was saying, you know, about the crocodile, when you get up, look in the mirror. If that person's not happy looking back at you, have another look and change your attitude. Of course, the first person you're going to see after you look in the mirror is your wife. And if she's not happy, the day's not going to go well.
I thought this was all about you.
No. So, you know, you've got to be in your right frame of mind before you go. Don't kick the dog, kick the cat. Yeah, be in the right frame of mind. Have a smile on your dial. It's not so bad after all. And my little saying is, look, I'm out there. I'm trying to help as much as I can. I'm getting a lot of help back. You know, I've had one hiccup that sticks in my brain. You know, we say about mental health and that. One of my good mates, I was talking to him 7 hours before he went. Yeah, he wanted to go. But, you know, trying to find little things why he wanted to do it, you know. And they say, oh, you know, you should pick up the signs. Well, I don't think I'm God, but I think I'm smart enough to should have picked up something, but I didn't. And then, you know, yeah, that goes through your brain. But I said, when they dig the hole and throw me in, throw the clods on and say, when you walk away, he did his best. That's all I ask.
All righty. So we'll wind it up there. And in signing off, I would like to thank you very much for getting off your asses, coming here today and actually putting in. And I really appreciate all of your input, really, because I know it is uncomfortable. But once again, I'm so bloody proud that my impression of Australians is right, is that we are prepared to do whatever it takes to help another person. So thank you very much.
I'll just tell them one quick yarn before we go. You've got to have a laugh. This old farmer had 10 ewes. 9 of them had lambs, 1 of them didn't have a lamb. One old ewe said to the other ewe, what's going on here either? We've all got lambs. You haven't got a lamb. Where's your lamb? She said, the day the ram was here, I must have been under the weather.
Well, podcasters, there you have it, our second live recording of a Mate Helping Mate podcast.
I'm grateful, as is the whole of the Mate Helping Mate team, for all the support we've got, whether that's sponsors, whether that's community members, you know, whether it's government departments, for all of the support that has been shown or been given to us in the making of these Bushbait conversations. And special thanks tonight for Sharon, Ian and Macca. So thank you. If you're impressed, particularly with this podcast content, and you'd like to participate in some other way, please get in touch with us via the Mate Helping Mate Facebook page, Instagram and website. Stay tuned, because there's more to come. Our working topic at the moment, or for our next one, is old pups. Old pups. Jesus, I tell you what, I'm losing it. It's time to hang up, you lot. Okay, our next episode, we think, is going to revolve around the wisdom of the age, or the older people, and wisdom from the youngs. Our working titles at this stage is Old Farts, Young Pups. Thanks, mates. Yeah!
This podcast was a Room 3 production and is brought to you by our mates at the New South Wales Department of Primary Industries and their Farm Business Resilience Program team. Episodes of this podcast can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts by searching for Mate Helping Mate and hitting subscribe. If you've liked what you've heard, make sure you leave a rating to make it easier for others to find us. Better yet, share it with your friends and family to start a conversation about mental health in the bush. This podcast was produced by Aaron Johnson and Lara Shearer and recorded and directed, edited by AJ Clifford for Room 3, a production company that works with not-for-profits and social enterprise. Original music by Southwark Sounds and stock by Soundstripe. Also, a massive thanks to John Harper, who for over the years has travelled this country tirelessly working to improve mental health in rural and remote Australia. And of course, his awesome offsider Michelle for her continued support for John and his work. We'd also like to thank and acknowledge those of you who have donated to Mate Helping Mate's GoFundMe campaign. Your commitment to seeing John do his thing has been integral to our work. In finishing, a reminder that this podcast featured general information only, and we recommend that you get independent advice from a qualified professional. Mate Helping Mate has links on the website with a number of great service providers across the country. Head to matehelpingmate.org.au. If you're struggling with your mental health now and need to talk, call Lifeline anytime on 13 11 14. Thank you for listening, and we hope this has helped you.